This is the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we talk about the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thank you for joining us. In the last week, South Africa's response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine has divided public opinion. Some felt our response was too tepid, while others supported Pretoria's call for a negotiated solution. In this week's episode of the Politics Weekly, we explore the government's rationale as well as options that may be open to it. My guests this time are Professor Daniel Bradlaugh from the Center for Human Rights at the University of Pretoria. He is, among other works that he has done, co-editor of the book Values, Interests and Power, South Africa's Foreign Policy in Uncertain Times. Quite apt for our conversation today. Also joining us, of course, is Kephas Khosana, who's the Sunday Times Opinions editor.
With immediate effect.
When people zone.
And I quote, in 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding. Unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Chairperson.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order. Ruling party by
point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
So the ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday?
Well, sabotage, that can be
this
determined.
Is not a shit.
Arms, can you please come in?
Welcome to the both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Let us start with the whole question of the whole concept of having a foreign policy. Shall I start with you, Daniel? Where does foreign policy, you know, as an instrument, fit in the relationships between countries? What is its objective?
Well, so foreign policy, I suppose, briefly described, is the relationship between countries, at least in its most basic sense. And it fits in the sense, if you think of it from our perspective as South Africa, it fits in that it's how do we use our relationships with external actors, as foreign states, international organizations, communities, businesses, etc. How do we use those relationships to help advance the values and interests of South Africa and its development. So how do we make sure that it's serving our interests, promoting development and the transformation that our economy needs? And how do we position ourselves as a voice in the global community so that we can influence the way the global system evolves over time?
Kephas, from where you're sitting, because you've been reporting a lot on government and government policies, etc. From where you're sitting, I would you say we do have a foreign policy or a coherent one?
Completely incoherent, given how we've dealt with the whole issue of well, the conflict itself. But, you know, even before then, you know, our foreign policy is extremely myopic. We say one thing, then mean another. We don't know what stance to take here and how to approach this and that. I mean, I remember during the Mbeki years, you know, South Africa was a country that was very, very firm, even though sometimes, you know, it took positions that were unpopular, but it was very coherent in them, and it was and it was very firm and steadfast in what it stood for. I feel that now we are just all over the place. We are haphazard. It's embarrassing. That's how I can describe especially the handling of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Professor Bradlaugh, if off the back of what Kephas has just said, if you were a friend of South Africa and you are regarding South Africa's foreign policy, would you feel reassured that South Africa would stand by you in times of trouble?
No, I think Kephas has summarized. I would maybe be a little bit more charitable than him in my description, but I think he's basically summarized the situation. We've had a very reactive policy. It's not clear that there's any clear strategic goals or agenda for our policy. And that's clear in this response to the situation in Ukraine. I mean, it's it's so obvious that this is an illegal invasion of another country. That's a principle that's fundamental, not just in international law, but in African political relations and as the structure of the AU. And South Africa has not come out in support of that principle. It did initially through Durco, and then it was withdrawn. And the statements just seem completely inconsistent. And as you say, we do not look like a trustworthy friend to anybody, because nobody can really know what we really believe.
Kefas, just to, you know, we've already started touching on the response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine in the last week. We've had at least three positions. First, we were saying there must be negotiations, and then we said Russia must withdraw, etc. And then we went back to the diplomacy track. What would have caused the backing and forthing? You know, from what you have been able to find out.
It's something that we keep exploring, that our guys keep exploring, you know, talking to sources at Durco, sources in the presidency. And from what we know so far, there is lack of communication between those two important pillars of governance, which is international relations, which, of course, you know, directs our how we relate to other countries, and presidency, which is, you know, the overall, you know, the overarching a big brother of government, if I may use that. And obviously, the foreign policy is not determined by Durco. Durco communicates and implements foreign policy. Foreign policy is determined by the country and, you know, the ruling party and everybody, cabinet, et cetera. But Durco and the presidency need to be, you know, on the same level and on the same footing when it comes to such an important issue. It cannot be that the minister of Durco, who's the Minister of Foreign Affairs, issues what, by the way, I did not think was a problematic statement, calling on Russia to withdraw the troops. I have no idea why it irked the president so much, because as Daniel has said, this, you know, it's genuinely accepted, and 90% of the globe, 99% of the globe, you know, accepts that this is a, you know, an illegal invasion and that Russia is the aggressor. We see, you know, the images every day of them targeting civilians, etc. I do not see any problem with that. But then, of course, there are other considerations that were behind the president getting angry at the statement and or being unhappy. Not just say angry, but being unhappy and demanding that that our message as a country be toned down. I just think it's unfortunate that had to happen, and it speaks to two entities, Durco and the presidency, that just are not talking to each other.
Kefas, you seem to be suggesting that it is more because at the weekend there was one view that was saying, that was basically saying, going down the route that you're taking of one department, you know, say Deco, the Department of International Relations, not being on the same page with the presidency, which is like the left hand not quite knowing what the right hand is doing. But then there was also a suggestion or a hint that there might be some other factor, you know, such as a probable ideological divergence. Would you put any store on that? Would you, you know, do you think that it's a credible explanation?
It is clearly, you know, ideological divergence. The ANC and to a large extent, President Ramaphosa, they base their whole concerns on their own, you know, historical relationship with Russia and the ANC's and the government relations and current relations with Russia, be it at BRICS, be it at whatever forum where we are close to Russia. And it is really unfortunate that that those ideological concerns then, you know, get to trump sound responses and sound foreign policy. It's not that when our friend is doing wrong that we should tiptoe around them and say, no, but we can't tell them you're doing wrong, stop doing that. We should be able to have that frank discussion and that frank approach to our friend to say, but we don't agree with you what you're doing, even though you're our friend. So it should not be something that as South Africa, we are either scared or are not willing to do.
Daniel, at the General Assembly, you know, when the vote was taken this week, South Africa was among 35 countries which abstained. Now, interestingly, among those are India and China, which are in BRICS, and yet Brazil took a different position. What does that say about? Would you say that our membership of BRICS may have influenced our positioning, at least in part?
I think it's a mix of two things. I think part is a legacy issue of the support that the Soviet Union gave to the ANC during the liberation struggle, and part of it is the connections through BRICS. I think plays a part in it. I think, in a sense, what you're seeing, and you know, Brazil, because of who their current president is a hard country to read and to understand always at the moment. But I think part of what's going on is that the world is shifting and countries are being forced into the position where the most powerful countries are having a conflict amongst themselves, and the smaller countries and countries like ours are having to work out which side they're going to be on in this coming version of a new version of a Cold War. And I think that the conflict between the presidency and Durko in some ways reflects that. And I think to sort of go back to your first question about foreign policy is part of the problem of not having a clear set vision of what it is that what the government wants from our foreign relations, what principles and interests and values are going to drive that, makes it very difficult for South Africa to decide where its real interests and strategic concerns lie in this conflict. And so it can't work out if it should support, you know, stand up for the principle of territorial integrity and sovereignty, or should support its supposed ally, Russia, in this situation. And that's highly problematic. And it leads, you know, to the statement that the ambassador made in the General Assembly, which is so pathetic that it leads countries saying, well, how can we take you even seriously on this? If, you know, it's one thing to have a position, but at least it should be some basis to that position. And that statement didn't convey that at all.
Kefas, just to come back to the earlier point that you made, you know, you seemed to be saying, if I understand you well, that condemning, you know, the wrong actions of your friends should not preclude you from promoting negotiations and mediating conflicts. But in our country, the response seems to be overwhelmingly against any talk of mediation or talking. You know, there seems to be a predominant view that says South Africa must condemn Russia, full stop. Am I reading the mood correctly?
From my own reading is actually the same as yours, in that I think that the general populace is on the side of, if I may, I won't call them the oppressed, but is on the side of those who are being attacked by the aggressor, which is Russia. And the general populace feels and can see, remember that, you know, this is a war that is, you know, it's being televised. It's live. We're seeing it. People are seeing the atrocities that are happening. You might say, yeah, you know, it's Western propaganda, whatever. But people are watching. People are seeing exactly what Russia is doing. and they will not be fooled, you know, by South Africa and South Africa's position, and trying to sort of, you know, appease Putin or whatever it is that South Africa is doing. The general public are saying, you know, overall, from what I'm sitting or what I'm reading, what I'm following on social media, what I'm following on TV, radio, talk radio, talk shows, etc., letters in newspapers, etc. The mood seems to be, let us be, you know, take a position that says that what Russia is doing is wrong, and let's take a position that says that we are on the side of those that are at the receiving end of aggression.
Professor Bredlow, the issue of public opinion, how much does it or should it count in terms of policy making like this, you know, for example, with regards to foreign policy?
It definitely needs to be taken seriously. It's not, I suspect, the determinant factor, because it's difficult for the public to really know all the relevant information to understand the policy issues properly. But to ignore public opinion would be wrong in this situation. I would just add that, in a way, it's not mutually inconsistent for the government to have taken a position, for example, that said, we condemn this invasion, we call on Russia to withdraw from Ukraine. But we also acknowledge that Russia has some genuine concerns about NATO's position and conduct over the last few years. And once Russia's withdrawn, we call for a process of negotiation and mediation to try solve those disputes. I mean, that would be a more principled position that could serve Russia's interests, but also show South Africa has a more principled position, which would also, and that, in a sense, the first part of that is consistent with the public perception. The second part, maybe the public is not thinking that like that, because and unless you're a foreign policy wonk, you're probably not as focused on it. But you know, at least that way, South Africa looks like it's taking a more coherent and principled position. And it's positioning itself to be seen as a serious voice on these issues as well.
If I may come in there, I slightly differ on Russia's insecurities. I think that Russia, this is not the Cold War. You know the Berlin Wall fell. The USSR, this is not the USSR. These are, countries that are autonomous, that have sovereignty. And I really believe that the people of Ukraine should be allowed to determine who they want to be close with. And as far as I remember, I think Ukraine wants to join the European Union and not NATO. But of course, a lot of people see NATO as the military extension of the European Union. But in as far as its desire to be part of the European Union, I don't know why that Putin finds that so threatening. I don't know why Putin, feels so... That if they join the European Union, by the way, the European Union, a lot of countries are opposed to Ukraine joining. So I don't think even the demand to join the EU is going to succeed, because there's a lot of stages that they need to go through. How is that threatening such a powerful nation as Russia, with the world's largest nuclear weapons arsenal? How is Ukraine joining the EU threatening Putin so much that he can justify this murderous exercise that he's undertaking?
Mike, can I jump in there?
Yeah, please come in, Danny.
Yeah, because I think you have to separate out the question of joining the EU from joining NATO. I mean, because I agree with you totally. Ukraine as a sovereign state has the right to decide whether or not it wants to join the EU. The thing about NATO is NATO was set up specifically to be an anti-Soviet Union organization, or defense organization, at the time of the Cold War. Once the Cold War was over, NATO's mission, in a sense, was over. And at, the Russians said, well, you know, why are you expanding the what was an anti-Soviet Union organization to bring it closer and closer to our borders? That looks like to them like a hostile act. It also looks and more debatable, but that a promise was given orally to Gorbachev that NATO would not be expanded. And NATO and the US has breached that promise and have continued to expand it. So that it is understandable that the Russians have some concerns about that. I'm not saying that their concerns are completely justified or that the response to that should be that Ukraine should be left hanging out on its own without being able to defend itself. But to say that we need to have a negotiation and a solution to what security in Europe looks like after the Cold War and maybe in a post-NATO world, I think is not an unreasonable thing to ask for. And it might be once Russia has withdrawn from Ukraine, having that sort of discussion is in the long run interest of everybody, including us in South Africa, even though we're that far away from that region.
Kefas, can I ask you this? Could we be, as South Africans, overstating our global influence currently? You know, the way that people are demanding that Pretoria should intervene, even if it's diplomatically, you know, seems to suggest that people think that we're quite an important player globally. What's your view?
I think that we lost a lot of that goodwill over the years, especially over the past 10 years. We didn't invest in that a lot. There was a point where when South Africa spoke, it was an important voice of the African continent that was speaking. The reason why we were admitted to BRICS was, I mean, if you look at those countries, you know, they dwarf us in terms of population size, but also GDP, you know, economy size. We are just a little baby compared to them. But, you know, they accepted us as an important voice of the African continent. And that's how, obviously, as a country, you know, we grew closer to Russia, we grew closer to India and Brazil and China. Would Putin listen to us today if we were to say, hey, come on, go to the negotiating table? I doubt he would. I doubt most of the world would hear our voice. I think that we have lost a lot of that respect, if I may put it globally.
Daniel, do you want to come in here?
Yeah, please, because I agree totally with that. The only thing I would say is that I think last year when President Ramaphosa was the chair of the AU and dealing with the pandemic, in 2020, South Africa gained back some of the respect that had been lost during the Zuma years. But I think the way we're behaving now is putting that at risk, because we gained respect because he marshaled the African continent to, you know, call for proper aid for Africa, to call for equity in the distribution of vaccines and PPE. And that people respected that and were listening to him. And now we look like we're going back to the way we've behaved in the past. And I think it's because we don't have the strategic vision of what it is we really want. And during the year of the AU, Ramaphosa really showed that he did have a vision of how he wanted to use international relations.
Hey, Kefas, where do you think we keep losing track of that? You know, I mean, you mentioned the Mbeki years, and then there's a divergence from that, and then sporadically, you know, we seem to be wanting to, you know, to be involved in, you know, in African affairs and to provide some form of leadership or co-leadership. And then we then subsequently look like we're not interested. We don't have the appetite.
Yeah, I mean, You know, Mandela was literally the darling of the world. Mandela, all he needed to do was just speak, and everybody would listen. But he infused, you know, a deep moral fiber in that. I remember when he called out George W. Bush. He was no longer president, but he still called out the American aggression in Iraq and Afghanistan before he died, especially in Afghanistan. So Mbeki then came in, and Mbeki was instrumental in the formation of the African Union, in having African leaders be part, well, not all of them, but mostly be part of the NEPAD initiative, even though, you know, the successes of NEPAD, yeah, well, they're debatable if it has been successful at all. Of course, he had his own missteps. Failure to call Mugabe to order was one of those. But, you know, we were respected. We were a voice to be listened to, an important voice of the African continent. But sadly, state capture versus all of those things, and now not knowing what to say and being incoherent on such a key issue, on such a an important issue, that's part of what contributes to us losing, you know, the status that we had.
Before we conclude, gentlemen, I'd like us to go back to the to what some people say is the root cause of what is happening in Ukraine, you know, or what has been happening in Ukraine over the last week, which is the perceived failure of the UN system. South Africa previously, you know, was among countries which were calling for, you know, the reforming, or, you know, of the UN, of the UN system and the Security Council. What has happened to that initiative, and is it likely to happen anytime soon, Daniel?
I think this crisis tragically shows the weaknesses of the UN system. I mean, because Russia has a veto, the Security Council can't do anything. The General Assembly resolution, I mean, it's significant, but it doesn't really change very much. And the UN, reforming the UN in this environment is going to be very difficult. If I can add one thing that we haven't talked about, and I know we're coming to the end, but just, you know, the reason it's so important that South Africa be able to have a voice that's listened to in this is because the economic situation and the economic sanctions are going to affect the prices of commodities like oil and wheat and what happens in the global economy. And that's going to have a big impact in South Africa. And if we could be a influential voice in these discussions, or at least a voice that's being heard, we could have some impact on mitigating the hard effect that the increase in the price of oil and wheat, for example, are going to have across the African continent.
Kefas, do you want to take the last word? Do you see South Africa getting its act together in terms of sending out a coherent, unified message? In terms of our international relations, do you see that happening?
So before I answer that, you did ask about the UN. And I totally agree with Daniel, because I even wrote about that the previous day in a column to say that in its current format, you know, the UN is a very, very, very poor forum for multilateralism, because when the five permanent members have got the right of veto, and they can just veto resolutions that involve them in the Security Council, and then everything goes to General Assembly, and the General Assembly, as you know, it can take a resolution, but it won't go even anyway. It makes a mockery of the UN, and it means that those long called for reforms are now more than urgent. I even say that, if the UN doesn't adapt and doesn't reform and doesn't adapt to today's realities, then it must die like the League of Nations did in 1946, because really the big five can just abuse the power of veto the way they have done. It is just not sustainable. To go to your question though, South Africa must just decide what it wants to say. South Africa must decide if South Africa wants to take a position, it must take a stance in a position. But right now, we remain on the fence, and us being on the fence, we lose respect each day that people don't know what we stand for and what our position on issues is.
Okay, folks, this is where we wrap it up on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. And I'd like to thank our guests who have given us very interesting perspectives about the current global crisis, that relates to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Our guests, Kephas Hosana, who's the Sunday Times Opinions Editor, as well as Professor Daniel Bradlaugh of the Center for Human Rights at the University of Pretoria. He, of course, is also author of the book Values, Interests and Power, South Africa's Foreign Policy in Uncertain Times, such as we're living in right now. And by the way, for a podcast of this conversation, you can go to iona.fm, to Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcasts. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do remember to stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places.